Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us right now at 1-800-462-7413. And as always, along with your call, some interesting topics to talk over, Zorba.
Yes, cognitive decline, a decline in how we think. When does this occur? Well, there's new research out of the British Medical Journal that says it may occur sooner than you think. And then Coca-Cola is jumping on the anti-obesity bandwagon. What does this mean? Is it real? Where does Coke fit into your diet? We'll talk about that information, too.
What's our recipe?
Cold noodles with peanut sauce. It's Asian-inspired. It will make you feel good. It's a full-tasting cold noodle recipe that is absolutely delicious. I guarantee if you try it, that you will love it because it is tasty and wonderful this time of year.
And if you've been with us for a while, you might recognize this one because it's from The Vault. Now, Zorba, let's get to the phones as we welcome our first caller, a listener in Buffalo, New York. Buffalo, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, we're going to be heading out to Breckenridge, Colorado, which I believe is at about 8,000 feet. I'm aware of the need to acclimatize. I prefer not to take any prescription drugs. I think there are a couple that are used by real climbers. But I'm also aware that if you go to 8,000 feet and immediately start to exercise, you could suffer some ill effects, including some pretty horrific headaches. I know it's not as if we're going to go out there and sit like couch potatoes. We are going to ski. We won't ski the first day, but I'm really curious as to what we can do in advance or while we're there to reduce the possibility of some a high-altitude illness.
Oh, sure. Have you skied out there before, by the way?
You know, it's a great question. I did many years ago. I'm 65. Uh-huh. Many years ago I did, and I made the mistake of skiing the same day I got there, and I had a headache that I would not want to repeat.
Got you. Yeah, I'm a skier. I love skiing. It's my favorite thing to do, and I love going out there. I've gone to Breckenridge, and I've when I was younger, I made the mistake and had horrific headaches and things. So I've got lots of opinions. By the way, the drug you're talking about is Diamox, D-I-A-M-O-X, 125 or 250 milligrams. Oh, a couple of times a day can make a difference. Not just serious climbers. A lot of people who ski take it. I myself have taken it. I think there are other things you can do and you don't need it. And it has some side effects, interesting side effects from the drug. Your fingers tingle when you have it. And fizzy liquids taste bitter. Huh. So I can still remember sitting in Breckenridge on top of a hill drinking a beer saying, "What's in this beer?" Not realizing it was a side effect. And when I went trekking in Nepal and I was at 18,000 feet, then I took it. But you can do a lot of things. First of all, where are you staying your first night? Are you staying in Breckenridge?
Yeah, we are. Unfortunately, I would have liked to have stayed in Denver.
Well, I'll tell you, I have a very specific thing. If you can, Idaho Springs, which is about halfway up the hill, maybe not quite half, that makes a big difference. In other words, not just staying in Denver, which is at around 5,000 feet, but staying at about 6,000 or 7,000 feet that first night makes a huge difference. And so first step I tell people is the way you acclimatize is the first night you don't stay as high as you are going to be the second night, if you can do that.
Yeah.
If you can't do it, well, then what you have to do is take your other action. The other action is not to do much the first day or the first half day. Hydrate. Now, it's not that hydration does anything for mountain sickness, but we're often dehydrated when we're mountain sick because it's dry up there and we don't take anything to replenish those liquids. So hydration is good. And then my recommendation for the headache pill is Excedrin Migraine. It works wonderfully. It's half aspirin, half Tylenol, dynamite drug, Excedrin Migraine. If you have a headache, it's 2 every 4 hours. And that first day of skiing, when you actually ski, you know, after you've acclimatized, you don't acclimatize in one day, you're not going to ski as well. The best thing you can do, once again, to acclimatize is not sleep the first night at that altitude. Breck is really high, and if you can sleep lower than that, that makes a huge difference. You will really do much, much better. The other thing a lot of people do is they'll take a sleeping pill for a day or two, Ambien, 5 or 10 milligrams. Get it from your doctor. You take it for a day because you get these funky dreams, and if you take a sleeping sedative, you won't.
Okay.
You won't. Stay well. Thanks much. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. That sounded like so much fun up there at 8,000 feet getting headaches and having to hydrate and taking it easy. And what? That's a vacation?
That's a vacation. You get a chance, but you get a chance to go down the hill. Now, when I think about that, what's so funny is when I was in Nepal and Tibet trekking, I went to 18,000 feet, and most of the time we were at about 16,000 feet. We were twice as high. And your body just adjusts to things like that, and you can actually enjoy it, Tom. Yeah. I know it's shocking. Mr. Couch Potato.
I'm sure it's well worth the trip. To our next caller we go now, and a listener in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Fine. How can we help?
I'm getting like these white spots on my shoulders and upper back area. They're maybe the size of the tip of a pencil. And I looked on the internet, and I'm thinking it's this thing called milk spots where it's a lack of pigment. And I'm not sure what's causing it or how I can possibly get rid of it.
How long have you had these, and how do you think you got them? Did you notice?
Well, I think I had 2 years ago. I had a rash kind of on that same area, and my family physician recommended like a red shampoo type of medicine. You leave it on for 15 minutes, and it went away. And I think that's when these spots first occurred. Then I still had that shampoo from 2 years ago, and I got that red rash again, and I used it again. And I think the two may be related, they may not be related, but 2 years ago I had maybe 10. Now I have probably 50.
Uh-huh. So has your family doc seen the spots at all?
I actually recently moved to Pittsburgh, so I haven't found a new family physician yet.
Well, first of all, a derm and looking at your skin over the radio, tough, you know, be able to get that x-ray vision and actually look at it. Common causes, there are common things that occur on the skin all the time that depigment the skin temporarily or permanently. There's an infection, which is really a mycotic infection, kind of like athlete's foot, called tinea versicolor, and that can actually produce a whitening of spots in the skin. It sounds like your doc may have given you a lotion for that. And with that, what happens is as you sort of kill this infection that's on your skin, you still have the spots until you go out and tan, which of course we always tell you don't tan, but when you tan, then those areas will tan the same as others and then make everything sort of confluent. So that may be one thing that you have. There are a lot of other things that you could have, though, that would actually, that would actually cause these. But they don't itch, right? They don't bleed.
Yeah, there's no discomfort whatsoever. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And you're bothered by them because of how they look to you, or you just want to know what they are? I mean, are they bothersome cosmetically?
Yeah, I'm more curious about what they are. I thought maybe it might have been a dietary thing.
No, I don't think so. I don't think I can't think of anything dietary that would do it. I don't think that anyone has cast a spell on you and given you spots. Doesn't sound like leprosy. It sounds like something that's really a benign condition. But once again, sometimes you actually go to the physician and they take little scrapings because they can't tell. Look under the microscope and see if it is a fungal infection. And if so, then once again, it's this lotion or pills that will make a difference. Other times we can't tell and we actually do a biopsy. But from your point of view, you've moved to a new city. I don't think it's going to hurt you. And so I think you can leave it be unless you want to go find somebody to look at it.
I might give tanning a shot and see what happens. After
yeah, especially since you did the lotion, you may want to do that. So it's one of those rare times that I'm recommending. Tom is smiling as I'm recommending tanning sessions in a tanning booth. It's an anathema, but I don't think 4 or 5 sessions in a tanning booth is going to ruin your life.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. So, Zorba, we used to think that cognitive decline began around 60 or so. New research says something different.
Oh, yes, and I think this is really important research from the British Medical Journal. And this is called the Whitehall 2 study. Whitehall is a big study like our Framingham Heart Study, which has continued for about 50, 60 years. And they observed people in a whole variety of different galaxies of how they actually survived. So these were 5,000 people, about half men, half women. Well, they were actually more men than more women, about 5,000 men, about 2,000 women, followed for 10 years from 1997 to around 10 years later through the 90s. 45 to 70 when they started, measured them in verbal reasoning, verbal scores, kind of IQ test types mm-hmm. of things, to see whether there was a cognitive decline. Cognitive decline in memory. You know, I know that I don't memorize digits and I couldn't memorize language as well. Reasoning. I've always felt that my reasoning really has improved in age. It's certainly better than it was when I was 19. I mean, when I was 19, seriously, my hormones interfered with my reasoning.
Sure.
You know, a girl would walk by and my reasoning would go, you know, go towards a girl. Phonetic reasoning, how you speak, and also semantic fluency, how quickly you can talk and bring up words, mm-hmm. you know, because you're thinking, you go, I know where that word is, but I don't quite have it. Well, they found that by the time you're 45 to 49, there was about a 4% decline in this, 4 to 5% decline. So it's not necessarily perceptible by you.
Well, that's quite a large number,
though. It's a large number. And by the time you were 60 to 70, it was actually a 10% decline.
Whoa.
In other words, and it was different. There was a difference between men and women. So this is really very significant. The cognitive decline may actually occur in your 40s. Now, it's significant because it's not something that you would think it's not something that you can do something about, but in the end, there really are things you can do about this.
What?
In other words, well, it's really more and more studies show that just like physical decline, cognitive decline is open to alteration based on lifestyle. So in other words, exercise reduces cognitive decline. Now, it's kind of weird because I'm not talking about mental exercise. I'm not talking about...
You're talking about physical
exercise. I'm not talking about crossword puzzles. Yeah. I hate crossword puzzles. So when they say, do crossword puzzles and you won't get Alzheimer's disease, I said, I haven't done a crossword puzzle since high school. I don't want to get Alzheimer's disease. I can do something else with my brain. It's physical decline. Mm-hmm. So more and more studies show that when you engage in exercise, you keep your mind sharp. Now, our brain is a physical object.
Sure.
It's not a mental object. It's a brain. And so keeping the blood vessels in our brain intact may defend cognitive
decline.
Well, that
makes total sense.
And once again, it shows us that diet and exercise are the key to a long, sweet life.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, our next caller is in Wichita, Kansas. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a problem with yeast. Since I was young, I've always had yeast infections, and I used to be able to treat it with like a Monistat cream, the 7-day cream, and I was fine and it would go away. But then as I got older, I had to also start taking Diflucan
mm-hmm.
pills by mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ones that I've had in the last few years, and they are recurrent, have been so bad that it takes sometimes several doses, and actually had to take it for over a month just to try to get rid of the yeast. And now, this time I have it, I actually took five Diflucans in a week over Christmas because I was so miserable. And someone told me that it'll make your hair fall out, so I'm hoping my hair doesn't fall out. But I don't know if it's true or not. But anyway, so now the doctor tells me that I have a resistant strain.
Mm-hmm.
And has given me a terconazole mm-hmm. cream mm-hmm. to use, as well as still taking the Diflucan
mm-hmm.
once a week.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is there something I can do with my diet to help not only now to get rid of this because it's still here, but also in the future? And if I was looking at the Candida diet,
mm-hmm.
and I wondered if that would maybe help?
Well, the person who wrote the Candida diet book made a lot of money. I mean, because he said Candida was responsible for everything, political unrest in Afghanistan to mental decline of the elderly was caused by Candida. So, and I don't think the diet really necessarily does much. But the real question is, why do you have this recurrent yeast infection?
Right.
Now, you don't have diabetes, correct?
No, okay, I do not.
Because that's the big – that turns out to be the big issue. It can be a marker. That's how diabetes can actually present. It can present with a yeast or a yeast infection, a candida infection. What I would do is look in the area that you have. There are integrative medicine physicians. There are not a lot of them in the country, but they integrate the best of Western medicine and alternative medicine. And that's where I would go right now to try to find out how to solve this problem. I would consider – I'm sorry. Yes?
Well, that's okay. I was just going to say I get it throughout my whole body. It gets in my throat. And that's when they gave me the Diflucan to take every day for a while.
So you got it in your – so they found it in your throat and they actually
–
and they were – oh, well, that becomes a different issue. Sometimes Diflucan, which is an anti-yeast pill, some people actually are on that once a week. And more than once a week from what I've read doesn't – you know, taking it more often, it doesn't necessarily make it work better. But you may need to be on that pill for a prolonged period of time. What kind of a doc are you going to right now?
A gynecologist.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think I would go to an infectious disease doctor. That's what I would do. I think you need a consult. That's what I say in a situation like this. If you have it in your throat, you need an infectious disease consult to see what's going on. That's a horse of a different color, because that means that, like you said, it's a bodily issue and you now have to figure out how to reduce it overall in your body. And I think your gynecologist was doing the right thing, but I think I would go to an ID doctor and say and get a consult on this and see what's going on. There's something going on that's presenting. We have yeast all over us. We always have them. And something is keeping your body from fighting it. And I think you need some further testing.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for calling. Sorry I couldn't solve the problem, but I can lead you the right way.
Right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
800-462-7413 is toll-free, of course. And before we take a short break, Zorba, let's play another round of Stump the Doc. Our contestant today is Krista, who can't put her finger on an issue involving her daughter. Krista writes, "My 13-year-old daughter has developed a problem with the skin peeling off of her fingers. This started last year, and it happens on both hands. It peels, heals up, and then it starts all over again. Any ideas? What's happening?"
Well, that's really a stump the doctor question. She did a great job. Number one, look at the soap you're using, because that can make a big difference. Mm-hmm. Often peeling is from skin that is too dry. If you use a deodorant soap such as Dial or Zest or Lifebuoy, you're more likely to have your hands peeled. Number two, make sure that you use gloves whenever you wash dishes. If your daughter does wash dishes, if she doesn't wash dishes. What are the odds? That's right. What are the odds? Well, you want to keep detergent away from the skin. And if your daughter is working on cars and working with car oil, and changing the oil can and fixing stuff like that, that's what you want to look at. You want to look at contact things that are on the skin. And number three, you want to then use a good moisturizing cream on your skin that will keep the moisture in, because the peeling is usually a symptom of dryness. And by the way, if your daughter does not wash the dishes, this is a good time to have her begin washing the dishes, because it will improve your life.
Well, there's a new thing called, dish washer.
I've heard of that.
You can stump Public Radio's favorite family doc. We'll then send your lifestyle mysteries to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more of your questions coming up. We have our medical myth buster later in the hour. Coming up next, of course, our yummy recipe, this one from the vault, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But of course, before our next call, Zorba Recipe Time, this one, a recipe from the vault. And today we're going to cool things down with an old favorite. Today's recipe is a fan and staff favorite from a few years back, and we've received a lot of requests for it over the years. So let's key into the vault and offer an encore performance of today's vault recipe for cold noodles with peanut sauce.
But it's a combination lock. How do you key into a combination lock?
Just trying to connect up there. Trying to be
cute and clever.
Even though it really is and a combination lock.
And right. Even though it's really online there.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Well, anyway, cold noodles. I happen to love noodles. I love noodles. I love pasta. Pasta's great. Do we eat too much pasta? Well, it depends on how much is on your plate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is a great recipe. Yeah. It's really an Asian fusion type
recipe. Cold noodles with peanut. I remember this one. I like everything in this recipe except for noodles and peanuts.
That's right.
Everything else is really good.
That's right. So soy sauce is great. Pepper is great.
Yeah, exactly.
You
exactly.
Eat everything else.
Put it on something else without the peanuts.
And you'll be just fine.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, start out with 9 ounces of linguine noodles.
9 ounces. Could it be other kind of noodles? Does it have to
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be linguine.
Okay. All right.
You could use actually, I have a number of patients now who use yolkless noodles.
I don't even know what that is.
It has no egg yolk in them. And so they're
yolkless.
They're called yolkless. And I've looked at it in the store. It's all over the store. And I thought yolkless. And then I make all these riffs. It's a yolk. But there are noodles that are made without eggs, and they're also really good. So 9 ounces of noodles, the noodle of your choice.
Got it.
So what noodle would you choose?
Spaghetti.
Spaghetti. Okay. Spaghetti.
That would work.
Yeah, spaghetti.
I know that's.
You know spaghetti.
Pedestrian.
Name another. Pedestrian. Pedestrian noodles. Okay, spaghetti. Name another noodle. Is there another noodle you can name?
I don't know. Those curly ones.
Curly noodles. The curly noodles. But you could use anything. Okay, we're done with noodles.
Right.
2 tablespoonfuls of natural peanut butter.
2 big T natural peanut butter.
Yeah, now you could use, all peanut butter is natural, but what we mean is unprocessed. The fact is, you could use any peanut butter at all. And A Cook's Illustrated, my absolute dynamite favorite magazine, did some taste studies on natural peanut butter and then manufactured peanut butters like Skippy. Mm-hmm. Where do those names come from? Skippy and Jif and what's another one?
Yeah.
Skippy and Jif are the ones that I think of.
Peter Pan.
And Peter Pan.
Yeah.
So they actually did a taste test, and the taste test actually showed that the manufactured ones tasted much better than the natural ones. It's very, very interesting.
I always think that the natural tastes better, but that
And I thought so too, but they did a number of taste tests. And so 2 tablespoonfuls, I'm going to change it to the peanut butter of your choice.
Got it. Okay.
2 teaspoons fresh lime juice.
2 little tea fresh lime juice.
It must be fresh. Do not use reconstituted. It won't taste good.
Yeah.
Fresh. 2 teaspoons of soy sauce.
2 little tea soy sauce.
And I would go for low sodium. I think low sodium soy sauce has improved dramatically, and I would use that.
Okay.
A pinch of cayenne pepper.
A pinch of cayenne pepper.
And if you pinch it, wash your hands. I still remember pinching some cayenne pepper and scratching my eye. Back in the day. It happened once.
Yeah.
For the fool, it happens twice. A 1/4 teaspoon of black pepper.
1/4 little tea black pepper.
That's right. 1/4 teaspoon of coriander.
1/4 little tea coriander.
Coriander gives a very, very nice, using it more for the smell, for the odor, which is really nice. You're going to need some hot water and a medium red bell pepper diced.
A medium red bell pepper diced.
That's right. Now, you could use green. You could use yellow. You could use orange.
Sure.
You could use purple.
Mm-hmm.
But red will be pretty. Okay, so cook the noodles as directed on the package. You could do this, Tom. This is your recipe.
I could do this, yes.
Cook the noodles as directed on the package.
Right.
What could be simpler?
Right.
Yeah, nothing could be simpler. Rinse the noodles in cold water, drain the noodles, and refrigerate them in a large bowl for 30 minutes. So take a little prep here, 30 minutes. It could be longer. could be for a couple of hours. Now, in a separate bowl, combine the peanut butter, lime juice, soy sauce, cayenne pepper, black pepper, and coriander. Add a small amount of hot water to the mixture just so that it stirs easily with a fork. So just a little bit of hot water until the sauce now has become, you know, has a uniform consistency. Then top the noodles with the small dollop of the sauce, about a tablespoonful. Garnish with the diced red peppers and serve.
And
you could garnish it with chicken if you wanted to. You could garnish it with tofu. You could garnish it with tempeh. You can pretty much garnish it with
garlic
everything.
Bread on the side.
Well, I think that's great. Maybe a glass of red
wine.
I'm ready.
If there's a recipe, cold or hot, that you feel needs another run in the spotlight, let us know about it. And it might just end up being our next recipe from the vault. Simply send the name of the recipe in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can look at all the other fine recipes that we have on the web. That's ZorbaPastor.org. You can also sign up for our podcast, and don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Yes, I have a question for you. I have been drinking a tea called organic turmeric ginger green tea for about 7 months now, and I drink about 2 cups a day. I've noticed that most of my daily aches and pains have diminished significantly after drinking it for 2 months. And I'm just wondering, are you familiar with any studies of turmeric and or ginger about reducing pain?
Well, you know, it's interesting that if you look at Ayurvedic medicine, which is an Indian-based, Hindu-based medicine, turmeric and ginger are commonly used, and we use them as spices, but they're commonly used as teas, which are said to reduce pain, reduce the discomfort of having a sinus infection, upper respiratory infections, and so on. So these are traditional remedies that have been used. And the problem with traditional remedies from a scientific point of view is that there's not a lot of money in doing the research for traditional remedies. You know, there aren't a lot of drug companies that are going to spend millions of dollars on something they can't patent that people can take care of. Now there often are some studies that are done. There's studies that might be done by a turmeric ginger tea company, but they're not very good studies. They're usually like studies of 10 people or 20 people, and they're published in what I would call junk journals. You know, so when they say scientifically based, they're usually – it's snake oil based. It's usually not scientifically based. But – from a point of view of treating pain, if it works, keep it up. That's really sort of my viewpoint. I mean, the reason is in modern medicine, what do we have? Well, we have anti-inflammatories on one hand. Then we have Tylenol in a class by itself. Then we have opioids, very good, lots of problems, you know, good bad with opioids. And then we have the neuroleptics, the drugs that are used for seizure disorders. They work for neuropathic pain. All of these drugs have side effects. They're all useful, but they all have side effects. Ginger, turmeric tea, they're not side effects from that. So I think I would keep that up.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just amazed at the difference because I used to take Tylenol and Advil every day and just about every day, and now I very rarely take it.
See, so that really – how often – now you take it twice a day, three – how many – how often are you taking it?
I drink about 2 cups in the morning, and I drink 2 cups a day.
I think
that's interesting.
You
speak of tea as how often are you taking it.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
What is turmeric? I know what ginger is.
Well, turmeric, when you look at when you go eat Indian curry, have Indian curry, and you look at the color of Indian curry, a lot of that is due to turmeric. It's a spice. Oh. Turmeric is a spice. And it's, as I said, it's traditionally used in Ayurvedic, which are Indian products, and has been very, very useful for a lot of people.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Eagle River, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello, Tom. Hello, doctor.
How can we help?
Well, I'm not brand new, so I'm used to my aging body sending strange signals. But about a month ago, I woke up with a stiff neck and kind of a achy feeling, you know, that you get with that. And I thought, well, it'll pass. Mm-hmm. But then, as time went on, it didn't pass to the extent that I could still feel it achy and kind of, you know, cranky and all that. And here comes a new development. I feel as though I've got ants crawling all around below the small portion or the low portion of the neck and the shoulder. And it has that feeling, the creepy, crawly feeling that I had never encountered before, and I didn't know what to make of it. And I was wondering what you thought.
You mean it feels like there's like a tingly feeling?
Not even a tingle. It's more of a dull feeling, but as though you have insects crawling underneath your skin.
Yuck.
And, you know, and I wouldn't call it an ache. I wouldn't call it a pain, but it's just a strange, eerie, you know, creepy feeling.
Uh-huh. How long has this gone on for?
I'd say for at least a month.
I've got a first question. You've had a creepy, crawly feeling like you have ants under your skin for a month. Have you called anyone about it, or have you waited to tell us on the show?
Well, yes, both. Uh-huh. I did. That's uh-huh. exactly right. I wanted to wait and see what you thought.
Uh-huh. So some very interesting when you've got neurological, you know, you've got a nerve that's firing like this. There's some things we call about right away. You know, there's certain amounts of pain that we go, I have to do something about it. And then there are other pains that are beneath the surface. They're there, they're uncomfortable, but they're not enough to raise a red flag that something significant is going on. So this sounds to me like this may be neuropathic pain. And neuropathic pain is pain that arises from a nerve somewhere, and the nerve is firing intermittently and causing you a problem. So I think this is a neck issue. I think it's either from the cervical nerves that come down. There's some superficial nerves that actually come down and go on top of the shoulder, and there's some deeper nerves that are also present there. And that's what I think this is. You may have a little disc there too, which over time will often get better. If you've got a disc disruption that's pushing on a nerve, they usually get better in 8 to 12 weeks. We don't operate on them. I mean, most of them, 99% of them, get better on their own. I have a recommendation. Good range of motion activities. If you come to our website, zorbapastor.org, I'll put some good range of motion activities on there. We'll connect it probably with a YouTube video, and I'll do that. And you can look at those. You can do those at home. I'd highly recommend that's what you do, because that's what I think this is. Doesn't raise a red flag in my mind that you've got to go and get it checked out. I think I'd do the exercises first and see what happens. I think it's a neck issue.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
800-462-7413. And before another short break, Zorba, it's time for you to grab your gavel for another case of Judge Zorba.
Okay, now I've got my gavel here, sitting right here. I don't know if we've ever shown a picture of the gaggle. We have shown a picture of the gaggle, of the gavel.
Everybody knows what a gavel looks like.
Well, I don't, you know, what do you think? But not
anyway,
this one looks like it's made of plastic.
Ivory.
No, I was going to say ivory, but ivory is politically incorrect,
right. you wouldn't have a gavel made of ivory. That's right.
And I know it's not made of ivory. You know what? It's made to look like ivory.
Yeah,
that's
go.
What
anyway,
it is.
Anyway, today's case comes to us from Sean in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and deals with a question your court may have ruled on once or twice before: butter or margarine. Sean writes, "Hi, Zorba and Tom. Please help clear up my confusion. I have been told by my doctor and dietitian that I should be using soft tub margarine in my diet, as it is lower in saturated fat and trans fats, which is heart healthy for me. On the other hand, people at the healthy food store and my chiropractor are telling me that margarine is bad for you as well, claiming that it turns to plastic after consuming it. That sounds crazy to me, but they swear by it. What is the better choice, tub margarine or butter? Love your show. You guys rock.
Oh, how cool is that?
Isn't that
yes.
Nice? Yeah.
Well, I think if margarine turned to plastic, you notice it. Let's put it that way. Yeah. It doesn't turn to plastic.
Yeah.
Margarine is made from vegetable oil, and they put a bunch of things in it to try to make it harder. And when you make margarine harder, then it basically adds trans fats. And a tub margarine has fewer trans fats. So you want to search for a margarine that says zero trans fats, and then you won't have it. Is it a healthier margarine? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does that compare to butter? Well, I think a little bit of butter is okay. You know, certainly I like butter on my toast or my English muffin or my crumpet. I've been eating crumpets lately, or bagels. I don't like to have margarine on it, but sometimes I'll have margarine. I choose a tub margarine that has zero trans fats because that's safer. Now, if you're in a health food store and you go, I don't want to touch margarine, it's an unnatural product, to an extent you're right. It is manufactured. Stay away from it and use little bits of butter, but make sure you don't use it when you're cooking whenever you can. You want to use an oil because it's really better for you.
There isn't a margarine where on the label it says won't turn to plastic.
Won't turn to plastic. That's it. That's it. Now, I've got another question, Tom. Do I get to strike the gavel because I just made my decision? I want to strike the gavel.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, here we go. What do you think? 1, 2, 3. I did it. I did it. Hooray.
What kind of judge asks if he can strike his gavel and then cheers after he's You got a little work to do on your judging. Give your lifestyle debates their day in court with some help from Judge Zorba. Add your case to the docket by sending your affidavit or email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some more interesting research coming up, more of your calls, too. And don't forget our medical myth buster later on in the hour, right here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Back to the phones in a little bit at 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, Coca-Cola weighing in on the obesity
issue. Right. Now, we know that there are too many overweight people in America.
Right.
And we know that we get lots and lots of our calories through sugary drinks.
Yep.
A can of Coke, depending on the size of that can or the size of the bottle, might be 150, 250, calories. You know that Michael Bloomberg in New York said, we're going to outlaw those giant gulpy drinks because they're just, there are too many calories here and we have to stem the obesity.
Caught a lot of flack on that.
He caught a lot of flack, and I've got questions about that too. It's sort of interesting. We'll see. It's an experiment. It's been done. They're not selling it in New York, like he said. And that might – would that cut down on the obesity? I don't know.
So maybe what's Coke up to?
Well, Coke said we're going to join the anti-obesity epidemic. Coca-Cola, which in many ways to me sort of signifies the wrong type of thing to eat or drink. It's a taste. And they actually had a marketing ploy where they said, well, look, we've got a whole bunch of products. And a lot of these products are really are low-caloric products. Now, the iconic Coke, of course, we know has lots of calories. But they advertise Coke Zero and Diet Coke and they talked about the fact that they have 180, this is their press release, 180 low-fat and no-calorie beverages out of 650 beverages. I didn't know they made so many beverages.
They don't make 650.
I think of Coke and Diet Coke and a few other drinks, but obviously they do under a whole bunch of names. So the real question is, can you drink Coke and still lose weight and be on a diet? In other words, is this anything different
than their Diet Coke or what's
The real question is, why are they jumping on the bandwagon in the first place? And we know why. It must be that they're losing market share for sugary products. Well, they're taking Coke out of schools. They're stopping kids from eating this junk food. I mean, Coke kind of to me is the junk food of junk foods. It's okay as a treat.
But I don't get what they're doing.
Well, what they're doing is they're trying to sell more product and say, look, you don't want to drink Coke Coke, why don't you drink our Diet Coke? Oh, yeah. And that will be good for you. I mean, that's the implication. The implication, they don't say it's good for you, but the implication is, well, if it's not bad for you, it must be good for you. There's no kind of neutral line. Yeah. And I think that's what they're saying. But it brings up the whole message up. It's sort of like when you're looking at a label, what do you look for? And the fact is, you want to look at calories, but on the other hand, soft drinks are still not what you call a nutritious product. So what's someone to do with something like this? I think if you're going to take a soft drink, that the best thing that you should still have is fruit juice. And I think half fruit juice, half soda water, seltzer water, is a good way of cutting down on your calories. Mm. I don't think that Coke is really doing this out of the goodness of their heart. I think that Coke is doing it out of the goodness of their pocketbook.
800-462-7413. It's toll-free, of course, and we have a line open for you. To a listener now, Zorba, in Visay, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I do not move much when I sleep. I wasn't aware of this until I watched a TV program several years ago, and it showed a time-lapse movie of someone sleeping. And just every 20 minutes, they were moving around, and I thought, well, I don't believe that because I don't do that. Mm-hmm. So I started noticing, and every morning when I wake up, my covers are the same. I'm in the same position. The only thing that moves is my legs. When I go to sleep, I put a pillow between my legs because I'm a side sleeper, mm-hmm. and my pillow sometimes has dislodged and it's gone. But other than that, I'm still on the same side, and if I do have to move in the night, it wakes me up. I am conscious of turning over. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, I feel like I've had a restless night.
So you don't move at all during... Tom, do you move during... when
well,
you sleep?
That's... I've got a long story, but can I ask the caller, do you sleep alone?
Yes, I do. I have for years.
Now, Zorba asked me, do I sleep soundly at night and never move at night, yet the next morning... Mm-hmm. My wife is complaining about how much tossing and turning I do at night.
Really? And you don't feel like you move at all?
I don't move at all.
You're asleep.
She's making this up.
How do you know? She's making it up. She's making it up. Now, I move all the time.
And you're conscious of moving.
Well, I'm often conscious. I'm throwing pillows out of the bed. We have a little dog in the house that we've been sitting. The dog jumps in the bed. I'm all over the place. And my wife moves all the time because she snores. So I can just tell if she's on one side, it's like loud and it wakes me up. And on the other side, it isn't. So you sleep well. Let's go to your problem. You sleep well. You're a sound sleeper. You feel rested in the morning most nights, correct?
Yes, if I go to bed early enough. I am a night owl, and I really am trying to change that.
Let's go back. Why do you want to go to sleep earlier now? I mean, that's your pattern. Stick with your pattern.
Because when I go to bed earlier, I do feel more rested in the morning, and I would like to get up early and see the sunrise that everybody talks about is so beautiful.
Well, you can't see it. I've heard about those sunrises.
I can verify the fact they are beautiful.
Right, because that's exactly it. He's a morning person, you see. That's very fun. Well, there's nothing wrong with not moving. You end up moving a little bit because you actually, even though you're in the same spot, your body is moving slightly. You may not be tossing and turning because you do move, because if you stay in the same exact spot, you develop pressure ulcers. So people, for instance, who are quadriplegics and don't move have to be moved every 2 hours because otherwise they develop pressure ulcers. So you're moving a little bit, but you're basically in the same position. You're kind of fidgeting a bit, I would say. I mean, if you had a movie on you, which you're not going to do, you move slightly. There's nothing wrong.
I can't get you to do a movie on me? Okay.
You're first up. When we do the sleep movies, Adam's got your number. You're first up and you can do it. Keep your patterns. Night owls are awesome. Stick with it.
Okay, great.
Thanks. And
Thank
take care.
You.
We'll call you about the movie.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster now. Today's myth might be interesting given the time of year. It has to do with snow shoveling. Can the act of snow shoveling actually be dangerous to folks with heart troubles?
The answer is absolutely yes. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And let me give you a good example. When you're shoveling snow, think about how quickly you shovel. So you're going... to put it into the snow, pick up the snow, move it over here, drop it. One, two, put it. You know, that's about the speed.
Yeah, I think that's pretty
good. If you measure it, it turns out to be 1 ton every 20 minutes. That's how much you're roughly moving.
That's a lot of snow. Yeah.
Well, if I put a pile of bricks in your front of your yard and said, you've got 20 minutes to move this ton of bricks, you'd call me nuts.
Yeah.
You'd say, I'm not going to do it. And what happens is men, women sometimes, but mostly men, look at that snow and immediately go, I got to go out there. I got to get rid of this right away. We're going to be, you know, chained in. We're not going to be able to get out and buy that, you know, go to the 7-Eleven and buy that fizzy stuff that we want to get. So the answer is, yes, it does cause heart attacks. And if you're out of shape, don't shovel it. Hire a kid down the block to shovel it. Or if you're going to go out and shovel it, do it wisely in small amounts where you're not really stressing your heart. But if you have a question, you got to talk to your doctor about this. Because every year in places in the country where it snows, they have a big snowfall. There are always a couple of men who keel over shoveling snow. And that's an awful way to go. You know, and then not only are you dead on the snow pile, but it hasn't been shoveled. So you've got a funeral to deal with, and you've got a messy sidewalk. So take your time if you're going to get rid of it.
Okay. Have a myth you'd like Zorba to shovel out of the way? Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
That number again is 800-462-7413. On we go, Zorba, to a listener in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Hey, I had a question for you guys. I have asthma, and I've had it since I was a little kid. I've always been really active, and I have allergies, too. And lately, when I've gotten the last couple years, it feels to me like the asthma sprays that I use, whether it's for the albuterol or the steroids, give me asthma. Could that be right?
Well, there's something going on. So let's look back at what you're taking. You've had asthma since you were a young child.
Yes.
And do you use inhalers? How often do you use inhalers?
Well, quite a bit. I probably use it a couple times a day.
Uh-huh. And this is the albuterol inhaler, the quick inhaler?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So studies have shown that's not healthy. I mean, there are a lot of studies on asthma. Asthma is on the rise. It's one of those things that is not on the decline. It is on the rise. So it's bad.
Uh-huh.
So some concepts came out that what we really want to do is reduce the inflammation in the bronchial tubes. The quick inhaler that you take in doesn't do that. It stops the spasm, if you will. So you want to get rid of the inflammation.
Right.
We do that. A great way is to do it with prednisone. You take high doses of prednisone and your asthma goes away. There's only one problem.
Right.
It's prednisone, so you can't take it for large periods of time. It's not really healthy for you. So we started using steroid inhalers.
Right.
Either fluticasone, which was one, Flovent, and then a combination called Advair, and there's some other inhalers called Spiriva that work a little bit differently. So which ones have you tried? Have you tried Advair?
Yes, I have tried Advair, and the doctors think I'm crazy that I don't think it helps.
Mm-hmm. No, you're not crazy. You're not crazy. You took it, and it doesn't seem to work. Have you tried? There is a pill called Singular, which is an asthma-type medication. I mean, it isn't a medication that's used for asthma. Have you tried taking that pill?
Yes, and it does help my allergies.
And I
take it. Uh-huh.
Well, it's an expensive pill for allergies.
It is very expensive,
yeah. So I don't recommend it when people take allergies. Over-the-counter pills work well. But it also decreases what's called mast cell activation and then helps with asthma. Have you gone to an asthma specialist?
Yes. I have a pulmonologist. And he's a pretty good guy. But he just really doesn't seem to believe me that any powdered inhaler seems to irritate my asthma. If I use the steroid inhaler, usually within the first couple of days of me using it, within a week, I'll have a bronchitis.
Okay. Have you used a nebulizer, an electric nebulizer that aerosolizes?
Yes, I have had that for when I've had a really terrible attack. I don't use it.
I have a suggestion.
Sure.
My suggestion is to see whether or not using the nebulized, you get the electric nebulizers, and use a steroid in the electric nebulizers so you're no longer using the powder of the powdered inhaler.
Right, right.
And the gas that's pushing it out, which is called, I think it's called HFA or HCA gas. You're not using that. And I think I would try a nebulizer and see if a nebulizer such as Duoneb, D-U-O-N-E-B.
D-U-O-N-E-B. N-E-B?
N-E-B. D-U-O-N-E-B. And see whether or not one Duoneb twice a day is going to make a difference and reduce the amount of albuterol inhaler, the rescue inhaler that you're using.
Right.
That's what I would try, because it may be essentially the inhalant that's causing the problem, the inhalant in the powder. And there are people who actually react to this. I mean, they just don't like it. It just doesn't feel good. I would try, if the nebulizer has worked for you, I would try a nebulizer twice a day and see if that'll cut down. You want to cut down on that rescue inhaler.
Thank you so very much. And by the way, I love your all show. I think I listen to it all the time, and it's just a great show.
Thank you.
Appreciate
the call. I'm really impressed, Zorba. She said, I have this problem. You said, have you tried this? Yes. Have you tried this? Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. Have you tried this?
Yeah.
Yes. I kept waiting for you to run out of things to ask her about. And finally, you came up with that one that she hadn't tried. I'm very impressed with that. And before we leave for the week, you have a small dissent to face up to for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. On a past show, we were discussing sneezing reactions to red wine and liquor. You believed it to be the sulfites in the wine and advised our listener to avoid wine altogether. Well, Kurt from Grays Lake, Illinois, doesn't want our listeners to cut off their nose despite their face, even though that would prevent any more sneezing. Kurt writes, Zorba, I am not a doctor, but I am in the wine trade. In the case of sneezing after red wine, I suspect the culprit is not sulfites, but histamines. Histamines occur in much higher levels in red wine, and sulfites occur in much higher levels in white wine. Before I would eliminate wine from my diet altogether, I would try switching to white wine with meals to see how that affects the occurrence of sneezing. Sulfites, unfortunately, are incorrectly blamed for many of the side effects of histamines and alcohol. If the wine you're drinking is not working for you, just move on to a different wine. If my advice sounds self-serving, it probably is.
Something new. I never knew that. That's wonderful. That's a good idea. It's white wine tonight for the sneezers in the audience.
If Zorba's advice is something to sneeze at, let us know during our next edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Just send your rebuttal to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org, or you can find us on Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor and Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Executive producer Adam Friedrich and technical director Brad Kohlberg, the withnail and I of the control room, are the two ponces responsible for this hour. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidwin. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping for your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0207Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.